Hello, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Sunday the 11th of October 2009, and today we are bringing you another special feature. Today we return to the Pentagon. We've done two investigative pieces on this so far with Dr. Frank Legg, and we've interviewed Dr. Legg twice, and the second time we covered the Pentagon exclusively. Now, this particular subject of the Pentagon attack on September 11, 2001 is a subject which is causing a lot of friction among members of the 9/11 truth movement. And it's unfortunate, I think, because, I do have a pretty strong position on disinformation, and I totally deplore the spread of disinformation and misinformation deliberately, which I think has occurred in research in 9/11, and particularly the people who go around saying that there were no planes at the World Trade Center. And that sort of thing, because it's really, really quite ridiculous, and because they haven't really been able to ever substantiate their outrageous sort of theory with any fact, that is actually quite undermining. And I have no problem with basically saying, look, we're not going to, you know, include that on our show, and we're not going to basically allow discussions like that to take over our forums and things, because they're just pointless and they are undermining. However, the questions about the Pentagon are, to me, genuine questions. And most people have them. Most people who are interested in what happened on 9/11 have questions about the Pentagon. I have questions about the Pentagon. They never released the video to show us the planes coming in, so we have nothing to go on. We actually have no visual evidence. We have photographs that show, you know, some sort of event occurring, a hole which seems too small, and basically witness statements, quite a few of them, which have to be taken, you know, at face value. You just have to accept the witness statements. So given all that, I think that when people come along and they want to investigate and they want to do some research, that it seems quite reasonable to look at different possibilities. Now, of course, a lot of this is speculation, and I don't think speculation is necessarily going to solve the problem. But I think in the case of the citizen investigation team and their National Security Alert film, I think that they've actually gone beyond speculation. I think they've actually put together some verifiable information, which definitely conflicts with the official story and definitely conflicts with the view that a plane hit the Pentagon, at least along the path that we've been told. So bearing all that in mind, I will just take a short little sting here, and then I'll introduce our guest. Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome to the show today Craig Rank, calling us from California. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you, Hereward. It's Craig Ranke, and I'm happy to be on your show.
Excellent, excellent. Now, what did you think of my little introduction there I gave? Have you got any comments on that? Because I'd like to, at the beginning of this show, really try and deal with the suggestion that what you guys are doing is somehow disinformation, because that is clouding the discussion. And I know that these claims have been made by certain people. Jim Hoffman and a few others seem to have taken this position. I don't understand it. Can you just give me your take on it, and you know, just tell our listeners whether or not, you know, are you spreading disinfo?
The answer is patently no, and I think anyone who's closely looked at the information with an objective mind frame will quickly be able to see that, because frankly, we're not asking you to believe us. We're asking you to believe the witnesses, the people who were actually there and watched the event go down. So it's not a matter of believing what we say. There's no theory. We didn't launch this investigation to prove a theory. It's another misconception about what we've done. People try to suggest that we went there trying to prove a flyover at the Pentagon. This is certainly not the case. We went to Arlington to talk to the eyewitnesses to find out what they saw, to put an end to the theorizing and the speculation.
Okay.
And the things that were happening and all the people, the conjecture that was swirling around and confusing everybody as to what really happened in Arlington that day.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, we certainly are not spreading disinformation, and you're right, there is a small contingency of people within the movement who are trying to accuse us of this, baselessly, of course. We call it a pseudo-controversy because, frankly, the controversy that you're talking about, we don't see very often in the real world. We've been to many 9/11 conferences and spoken in New York on 9/11 this year, in fact. And, you know, everywhere we go, we're just greeted with nothing but praise and people who absolutely question the event and support the research that we've done. But not only that, but we also have an unprecedented amount of support from a lot of the notable figures and scholars and activists and researchers and experts within the movement, and unbiased military people and journalists as well, who have endorsed our latest presentation, National Security Alert.
Yeah, well, I noticed you've got some pretty credible witnesses in your film. You've got like three policemen. I mean, two of them are actually filmed by you, and they seem very genuine and very keen to actually share their information. And you've said in the film that they've stood by their claims, even knowing what the implications of that are, which is difficult for a policeman to do. I mean, you know, they work for the government, so that's impressive. Although you did say in the film that the police are now gagged. They're not really allowed to talk about it anymore.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not trying to say that they support any sort of theory. Many of them are certainly in denial, as just like a lot of you may be aware, when you present this information to somebody who's not aware of it, their mind tends to shut down. There's a psychological hurdle that you need to leap over to even consider the notion that 9/11 was an inside job. So naturally, these witnesses who are not aware of the implications of what they saw when we talked to them, who now are aware, are either scared to talk, or in the case of these police officers, we're definitely told that they can't talk to the media anymore without approval. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be difficult to get approval to have them talk about their experience on 9/11 now.
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, the number of people who've spoken out, I guess, just needs to be greater to get that greater groundswell. Yeah.
Right. People need to feel safe and feel protected in speaking out, the witnesses. And, you know, that's a difficult situation for a lot of them. Now, you know, just to back it up, we might as well give your listeners a quick overview of what we've discovered.
Excellent. Thanks. Yeah.
Sure. My partner and I, Aldo Marquis, we've made several trips to Arlington, Virginia, to interview eyewitnesses on the scene to find out exactly what happened at the Pentagon. And everyone we spoke with unanimously told us they saw a twin-engine passenger jet airliner flying low, treetop level, headed fast towards the building, timed simultaneously with an explosion. So right away, we started realizing, of course, there was a big plane there. These talk about missile or Global Hawks or A3 Sky Warriors and small planes is likely not true. That was quickly determined. Now, what we determined then, of course, was to compare the location of this plane and the trajectory in the flight path in relation to all of the official reports and the physical damage, which really delineates a very specific trajectory requiring the plane to be on the south side of Columbia Pike and on the south side of the former Citgo gas station at all times in order to line up with the physical damage, namely the light poles, the five down light poles, and of course the generator trailer that was billowing out diesel fuel smoke and turned askew. And then the damage to the building leading from the E-ring facade all the way to the C-ring hole, the strange round anomalous C-ring hole. It's all very directional and lines up in a manner that requires a plane, physically requires the plane to be on the south side.
Now, if I can just interject there, the sure. government is committed to the south side flight path because of what they said in the 9/11 Commission, where they demonstrated the path, didn't they? They've actually committed themselves to saying that that was the actual path that it took.
Absolutely. They presented an animation during the 9/11 Commission hearings that were broadcast on CNN, and we present that animation and that broadcast in National Security Alert showing how they commit to a south-southern approach flight path. So there's no way around it. Of course, even without these government reports, the physical damage is what requires it, because we really don't take any government report at face value. We only accept independent, verifiable evidence as a means to determine what happened that day. And so ultimately, the photographic evidence of the location of the light poles and all of the physical damage requires a plane to be on the south side of that gas station, when, in fact, that's not what any of the witnesses we spoke with in a position to tell told us that they saw.
Okay. So the physical evidence includes the clipped light poles, the flight recorder data, the angle that it came in on the building, I guess the topography. Does the topography allow for the plane to have perhaps come in on that other angle and actually hit the building? I mean, you don't really sort of explore that possibility that it did hit the building, but it hit it from a different angle. I mean,
no, it's absolutely impossible. And the light poles make this obvious to the layman just by looking at the photographs and the location of the poles.
Right.
And then determining the plane. We know that it's impossible just by looking at that for a plane to hit the light poles. But this is also the case with all the other physical damage, including the generator trailer and the damage to the building itself.
Oh, yeah, there's some damage to that fence around the generator trailer as well, isn't there? Which in one of the official animations I've seen, it's like one of the engines sort of plowed through that. That's what they're saying, that's apparently what they claimed.
Yeah. Right. The generator trailer is a big 40-ton diesel-fueled generator trailer that had a fence around it. It was part of the construction renovation that had been going on for years, conveniently only in the area of the Pentagon that was destroyed.
Right.
So that renovation was scheduled to be completed that very week of 9/11. So obviously this gives them lots of opportunity. This is why, of course, only 125 people died inside the building.
Yeah.
Whereas if a real plane hit anywhere else in that building, thousands would have died.
Yeah, there would have been many, many more people in there a couple of weeks later, I guess, yeah.
That's correct. So that's an important point, because this gives them the opportunity to do what they needed to do to prepare for the operation. But also, this generator trailer, there's evidence that they were actually wrapping up the renovation that week. We have testimony, official testimony from Pentagon renovation workers who testified to this and suggest that there was a lot of activity going on the week prior to the event, because they were wrapping up that semi-permanent construction site.
Okay.
And even moving around trailers. We have an actual quote from the Center for Military History where they say that they were moving out construction trailers. So what this means is they could have easily started to remove the generator trailer and perhaps turned it askew as if they were getting ready to remove it, all in preparation for the event. And people would be none the wiser, because they'd have the cover of wrapping up the renovation, and it would not seem suspicious to normal workers.
Right, yeah. Well, that's pretty interesting. So your research really focuses on this question of the impossibility of that path, and the best pieces of evidence I think that you present in your film is that the plane must have passed over the Navy Annex, and if it did pass over the Navy Annex, it can't have hit the light poles, because a lot of observations can have margins of error in them. But you've got people who basically are saying, well, I was in the Navy Annex and the plane flew directly over me. And you've shown how that path is completely incompatible with hitting the light poles or, you know, anywhere near the official path. I mean, it just doesn't work. It's there's two angles here. Like there's one coming in sort of, if you imagine a triangle, you know, like the one path is the government path. That's one arm of the triangle. The other path is the path that includes the Navy Annex. They both do sort of converge on the same point, Like they both converge on the same point, which is actually where the explosion took place. But you're saying that what actually happened is that the plane was following that south side path.
Well, the north path.
The north path. The north side path, and didn't hit the building at all.
Right. Well, in fact, if it's on the north path, which all the eyewitnesses we spoke with in a position to tell confirmed unanimously, it absolutely cannot hit the light poles or the building and had to have flown over. It's really a non-controversial scientific fact that not even our most vocal detractors, such as Jim Hoffman and many others, will contest, because they know this is the case. They absolutely know that the plane has to be on the south side of the gas station, but not only the gas station, but Columbia Pike. Now, you're right. The Navy Annex is on the north side of Columbia Pike. The Navy Annex is a big government building, very large. It has these wings to it. And Terry Morin is the witness that we present in National Security Alert, who was between those wings outside, but he saw the plane fly directly over his head. Now, when you're between the wings of the Navy Annex and you see it fly over directly over your head, it'd be pretty difficult to mistake for a plane that was really had to be completely on the south side of the street altogether, far from where he was. Well, not
absolutely
that far, but certainly far enough that it would be quite easy for someone like this to tell. Now, Terry Morin's a professionally qualified witness, as he is an aviator with the Marines back in the day. So he not only corroborates this path directly over the Navy Annex, but he also was very notable about the fact that the plane was going much slower than officially reported. And this is also corroborated by several other witnesses and would help facilitate this banking approach. So that's the other thing. It's not really a triangle, because we're not talking about a straight path on the north side.
Okay, yeah, it was kind of banking as it came in, correct, yeah.
Right, and many witnesses saw this bank, which also is completely irreconcilable with the official reports and the physical damage, and, of course, that dubious surveillance video that shows a very straight, low and level impact of some ambiguous object into the building. Of course, there's no reason to accept that video as valid, since it's been sequestered and provided for by the suspect, and it's dubious on many levels. But it certainly is contradicted heavily by all the eyewitnesses we spoke with.
Craig, did you try to find out what other videos might be available, like might actually exist, that might have better quality, better resolution? I mean, were you able to dig up any information about whether those videos exist?
Well, a lot of people focus on the videos and want to see the videos and demand a release of the videos.
Yeah.
But to be honest, no, that hasn't been a focus of our research, primarily because to get the videos, you have to get up from the suspect,
right?
Meaning the FBI.
Yeah.
So that means when they're actually controlling the evidence and providing that evidence for you, there's no reason to accept that it's valid evidence, because clearly they've only released what they wanted to release when they wanted to release on their own terms. And, you know, there's really no reason for us to accept that as independent evidence, so we simply don't. So that really isn't something that we're calling for. Unlike many other people out there, we seek out independent, verifiable evidence specifically. And when it comes to the Pentagon attack, that really boils down to eyewitness reports and firsthand eyewitness accounts. So that's why we focus so heavily on that.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think, although it would be difficult for them to obviously provide a convincing faked video of the plane hitting the building. And if indeed the plane didn't hit the building, that would explain why they haven't provided anything. Because anything they do provide is going to be picked apart and looked at very critically, just as was the security video footage. You're quite right. And I think it serves the purpose of clouding the information, keeping everyone guessing. And this is something that I think we can agree with Dr. Legg on, is that there has been a policy of doing everything they can to keep us confused and keep us in the dark. And that seems to be, and also even to introduce, potential ideas that may not be true or whatever, is also a part of a military-style disinformation plan. So there's a lot of cleverness, I guess you could say, in the way they've kept this whole Pentagon thing so confusingly obscure, so ambiguous.
Absolutely, I agree with that. In fact, we think that that is indicative of the notion by the missile theory, which really there's no evidence for.
Indeed, indeed, yeah.
And that was first uttered by Rumsfeld himself. So you got to figure the source here. And then it grew after they released leaked the 5 frames of that security video. Now all of a sudden everyone's focusing on something hitting that building. And so now obviously what they put out was ambiguous and not clear, not definitive about what it was. Some say that it showed a small jet. Some say it shows a missile. Some say it shows a jet shooting a missile.
Yeah.
But the strange smoke plume you see doesn't cast a shadow, and there's a lot of other questionable details that show that this video has been manipulated. Now, it's easy to put out an ambiguous, non-definitive video that has been manipulated, but to put out a clear video of a plane actually going into that building and to fake it, like you said,
yeah,
I also believe would be extremely difficult, if not impossible. Yet
yeah,
this is really what most of the people who are against our findings and really people within the movement who are talking out against us, that's their biggest argument. They're afraid that one day the government's going to release a fake video of a plane hitting the building, that they're actually going to use CGI or something to create that, when frankly I think the notion is ludicrous. That plane did not hit, and the eyewitnesses are what prove it. And so they're not going to release any video. And this is why there's been a deliberate cover-up, not only of the video evidence, but also of the 911 tapes and transcripts, all the reports, the initial reports of what people said when they first called in to 911. While those were released in New York, they've been permanently sequestered by the FBI and have not been released in the Pentagon. And we've gone after them. And believe me, they're not going to release those.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, look, in regard to the possibility of a video being released, I think, Dr. Legg said that, he thought that they might release a video that actually proved that a plane did hit the building and that they might have that there, that they've been keeping it to basically deflate or discredit the movement.
Except we know that the evidence proves that it's impossible for the plane to hit from the north side. So that means there's no way they could have that unless they faked it. And
right,
unfortunately, that's what Frank Legg hasn't addressed, is the evidence that we present proving that the plane didn't hit.
I think that's correct. I mean, from your point of view, obviously, you think that. And I'm still, not convinced, but I'm pretty interested in it. I'm not convinced that that a plane didn't hit the building, but I'm not either certainly not convinced that a plane did hit the building. Now,
you convinced after seeing the witness testimony that we present that the plane flew on the north side of the gas over the Navy Annex on the north side of the gas station?
Well, that is beginning to look pretty strong to me. So that the implications of that, of course, are quite serious. I mean, they basically do conflict with the what we've been told about how the plane approached the building.
Okay, well, I'm here to tell you here, Ward.
Yeah.
If you do accept this notion and the evidence that we present that the plane flew directly over the Navy Annex and north of the former Citgo gas station, that you absolutely, 100%, unequivocally must accept the fact that it did not hit the building and continued on,
yeah,
as reported by other eyewitnesses that we present.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll take that on board, believe me. I'll certainly take that on board. Now this question of what happens then. So the plane is approaching from the north side, and it's not low enough to hit the building. It's just what you're saying is it's actually above the rooftop of the Pentagon, and it crosses the rooftop of the Pentagon around about the same moment a giant explosion occurs. Is that what you're proposing?
The exact timing, of course, would be impossible to tell.
Yeah.
No eyewitness account is going to be 100% accurate. And when you're talking about a matter of seconds here, it's very difficult to tell. So whether it crossed the facade maybe a second prior to impact, or maybe it crossed not directly over the hole but a bit south of it during the explosion, rather, not impact, of course, then we really can't tell this. But what we know is that it was banking right, and it was in a very, quite notable and obvious bank to a lot of the witnesses who drew the bank and actually depict the tilt of the craft as it was headed towards the building. But that means, as it's on the north side of the gas station and banking right, it's headed towards south parking. Now, sure enough, Pentagon Police Officer Roosevelt Roberts Jr. is on the south side of the loading dock, and he reported officially in 2001 to the Library of Congress that immediately after the explosion, he saw another plane, and what he believed was, quote, another plane. However, there was no other plane in the airspace at the time of the event, and certainly not like the one that he describes, because we got a hold of Roosevelt Roberts Jr., and he confirmed not only did he see this plane, but that it was 50 to 100 feet altitude, so just barely above the light poles. So, yeah, it had to pass extremely low, very close to the roof of the Pentagon, because this is where Roosevelt Roberts saw it after the explosion, flying away and banking around and taking off.
Right. And look, that's a really important piece of testimony, which I hadn't seen before. I watched the film last night, actually. Now, the fact that we do have at least one person there saying that they saw a plane flying away, you've got a second report somewhere in your film. One of the criticisms, though, that I've had given to me is that a lot of people should have seen a plane flying away because, according to Dr. Legg, there's a freeway that goes right by and they would have seen the plane flying over the Pentagon. I can't really say, you know, it's a really technical point. But one thing I do know is that there are a lot of planes flying around that area all the time. And even while you were interviewing someone, I saw a plane flying over. It actually looked like it was flying over the Pentagon. It probably wasn't. It was just in the distance. But in your actual film, there's an airport within a few miles, and there must be planes flying around all the time, correct?
Absolutely. Reagan National Airport's about 1 mile from the Pentagon, and the runways pretty much line up with it in the Potomac River.
Yeah.
So you see large low-flying aircraft taking off and landing at Reagan National every 2 to 4 minutes over the highway, barely over the highway, all day long, every day, 24 hours. So it's a continuous presence. Many people are under the misconception that the Pentagon's in Washington, D.C., and is restricted airspace. Well, it's not the case. The Pentagon is across the Potomac River from D.C., and it's in Arlington, Virginia, right next door to the airport.
Right.
low-flying planes in the landscape are a very, very normal sight to people in that area. So, yeah, we have no doubts that many people did see it. And again, we present direct evidence that people saw it. So the notion that, you know, this plane flew over the building and that nobody saw it, people try to suggest that this is our contention and that it's a ridiculous contention. Well, it's not our contention. We know that people saw it and we present evidence for this.
Right. Yeah, you do present at least one credible witness there who saw, and he said, definitely says a commercial plane, and he says it had jet engines, so... Yeah, I mean,
and there is a direct corroboration for this from Eric Deal, who is an Arlington Cemetery employee. Now, he told the Center for Military History, we have the recorded audio, again, from 2001, that immediately after the explosion, he ran outside from the maintenance building in Arlington Cemetery, and the first thing people told him, and he says people, plural, was that a bomb hit the building and that a jet kept on going.
Right.
The very notion that we've got more people already reporting this, and we even come across this buried in the archives of the Center for Military History, is extremely strong evidence. I mean, naturally, within the propaganda immediately after the event, right away, within minutes, the media was reporting that American Airlines 77 hit the building. So what you have are a bunch of reporters on the scene looking for eyewitnesses to corroborate this. So any eyewitness who was in a position to see the plane but couldn't see the alleged impact point, and perhaps after the big explosion naturally believed or deduced that the plane hit the building, would fit that bill. But anyone who talked about a plane flying away would seem anomalous. And as in any traumatic event, you're going to get anomalous accounts. So this could be a very good reason why a lot of the even the honest meat people in media would not report this, even if they came across these witnesses at the time. However, that's another thing. The topography is very complex. Not only is the Pentagon next to Reagan National Airport, but the Pentagon's at the bottom of a hill. So after the Navy Annex, there's this steep decline before you get to the Sitco Station. And so when you're on that highway there, you really don't have as good of a view as many would think when you look at the overhead. And a lot of the people, I'm sure, in Australia especially, who've never been to Arlington, when they do their research, you're looking at overheads. So a satellite image or a map of the area.
And you can't see the topography, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You can't see the topography. You don't know what the landscape is or what the actual POV is for a person in that position. Now, we have a little video we present called CIT Jet and Cross Town, available on our website, and it's just really nothing but us driving around the area, showing you the actual points of view from a car in these highways. And you can see it's really not all that clear, especially for somebody driving and who's paying attention to the road or on their cell phone and doesn't really know what happened until after the explosion. A plane flying away after the explosion would not be of consequence to them. Their eyes would be on the burning Pentagon and the fireball rising, of course.
Look, one thing, Craig, that's come to my mind from looking at all this, and it's not really part of your film, but there's been a lot of claims from the 9/11 truth movement that the Pentagon would have missile batteries. Now, that's been denied officially. And I'm just wondering about it because I don't think that with the amount of commercial aircraft flying around there, that the idea that the Pentagon would have basically shot down an approaching plane with a missile, therefore the plane shouldn't have been able to hit the building. It's an argument that's popped up quite often. And what's your take on that? I mean, do you think that the Pentagon would have had missiles with which they would be able to take out a commercial plane that maybe wasn't, you know, sending the correct encrypted signal? I mean, obviously, they have to recognize friend or foe if it's a military thing. Have you looked into that at all?
Well, you know, there's no evidence for it. Certainly, if they do have such a thing, it's covert, and the people will never know. And
Indeed. Frankly,
it's a non-issue. Because, honestly, even if they did, and they didn't fire these missiles to stop the plane, that only implicates LIHOP, or let it happen on purpose, when we know at the World Trade Center we have direct evidence for MIHOP, meaning that this was a staged operation. So, naturally, they're not going to shoot down their own plane that's a part of their own black operation that we know has been proven many times over at the World Trade Center and now, of course, at the Pentagon, simply by this north side approach evidence that proves that the plane was not Flight 77 and that it could not have hit the building and had to have continued on.
Yeah, look, I think that just totally fits in with this pattern of confusing and ambiguous misinformation about the Pentagon. Look, I'm just going to take a really quick break here and we'll be right back to get into more of that. Just stand by.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio, and I'm Herewood Fenton, and I'm here today with Craig Ranke, who's calling us from California. Whereabouts in California are you, Craig?
Orange County.
Orange County. Where is that in relation to the major cities?
Yes, it's like between L.A. and San Diego, so Southern California.
Oh, Southern California, yeah. Are you part of like an active kind of 9/11 truth group down there? Do you kind of get into like street actions and that kind of stuff?
Well, we're more on the research side of it than the activist side, but we do attend many 9/11 truth events, have spoken at several, and yes, we're close with We Are Change LA and several other activist groups here in the States. Absolutely.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, well, today I'm in Australia, and of course it's the 11th of October today. We have a little group here in Sydney who does something every 11th of the month, and some of those guys are out there today at the Sydney Town Hall, so you know, good luck to them. Basically we are all trying to get to a point of truth on this issue. The issue of what hit the Pentagon is part of, it's very, very important part of what happened on September 11. And we need to resolve it. And it's not, you know, like these questions and arguments that occur between people inside this movement are so small in relation to the bigger picture, and the average person is completely unaware of these issues. They're only aware that some people think that 9/11 was an inside job. And I think some people get too caught up in it. They get too caught up in the internal thing, and they think that's really big and important. Whereas in fact, it's almost insignificant. I do stress though that, you know, we have to prevent disinformation from creeping in. I mean, you'd agree with that, sure, would you not, Craig? I mean, we need to guard against disinformation and misinformation, and we need to try to adhere to what is a provable fact as much as possible.
Well, absolutely, and that's why we launched the investigation to begin with, to go there and find out directly from the source what happened, rather than use conjecture, speculation, and various theories out there, really based on no evidence whatsoever.
Yeah, correct. And look, I'd like to turn to look at the light pole evidence, because that's one of the most intriguing parts of your movie. And it's one that's sort of puzzled me for a long time. I'm just going to play a little bit from the film here. I've just got it lined up. So I'll just play it here, and maybe we can just stop it and talk a bit about it.
As unanimously demonstrated by the witnesses, the plane was nowhere near the five down light poles. But it was furthest from light pole number one, which is what cab driver Lloyd England claims he lifted out of the windshield of his cab minutes after the attack. Specifications obtained from the Virginia Department of Transportation reveal that this light pole stood 40 feet tall and weighed 247 pounds. Not a single photograph exists showing the pole inside the cab. Not a single witness exists who says they saw the pole inside the cab or the cab driver removing the pole. Most importantly, they all say the plane was nowhere near the light poles. Yet Lloyd claims he came to a stop sideways on the road, with the over 30-foot-long light pole still sticking out over the hood.
Now, I'll just pause it there. Of course, one of the most glaring inconsistencies there is the fact that the car, apart from the windscreen damage, doesn't appear to have really been damaged much by the pole. The hood is completely unscratched. And Lloyd himself mentions that in your interview. Seems that he's a bit puzzled by that. But, you know, and there's a little drawing here that he's provided with the pole kind of sticking out. Now, the pole weighs 250 pounds, so I guess it's too much for one person to move. Obviously, it needs two people, and it's a fair amount of weight. Look, it's an anomaly, that's pretty disturbing in terms of why, you know, how could this pole just go through the windscreen and not damage the rest of the car? The interview that you've done there with Lloyd, he sounds pretty, pretty like he's hiding something when he's talking. He's a bit shifty in the way he talks about it. And he makes a lot of references to people who, you know, big people who do things, and he's just a little person. And he's married to someone who works for the FBI. Now, his position in this is sort of important, because I guess he becomes like the human face that demonstrates that something really happened there with the light poles. He is like, and I think a couple of articles were written about it at the time, and that photograph was published in magazines and newspapers. I don't know, like, can you just pick up on that, Craig?
Well, yeah, the account of Lloyd England is a major focus of researchers for years, because it's been heavily used as part of the propaganda to sell the official story and sell the low and level impact of a plane into the building. And sure enough, if his story is true, it does, in fact, prove that a plane hit the building, as reported, because there's really nowhere else for it to go from that point.
Yeah.
But then, of course, if it's false, then we know that this has been proven to be a psychological black operation, and that the stage with the light pole, the scene with the light pole and the cab on the highway had to have been staged. Now, despite the fact that Lloyd's account is dubious on its face and very questionable from a physical level, when you just look at the physical evidence, of course, it's the eyewitnesses, all of the other eyewitnesses who watched the plane approach, who are able to tell us exactly where that plane was in relation to the gas station and in relation to the light poles, who prove his story false. So a lot of people out there say, well, yeah, his story seems crazy, but, you know, a lot of crazy things happen during a situation like this. Well, his account is rather important.
Right.
Being that it's make or break for the official story, and since, of course, we know the plane was nowhere around there, we knew that he was highly implicated as a part of the operation. So when we went to interview Lloyd, we interviewed him the first time. We actually didn't even have – it was back in 2006. We didn't have all the North Side evidence implicating him, and it was just the dubious details that made us suspect that his story wasn't true.
Okay.
And so that initial story interview in 2006 is where a lot of the details about him removing the pole on the with help of the silent stranger who never said a word, and how he fell down while removing the pole with help of this guy who then took off without ever talking to him at all. We presented that. And then, of course, he also pulled out photographs showing that he had a David Icke book in his car on 9/11 as well.
Yeah, I saw the photo of that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what are the odds? He's certainly not your typical demographic. And then, you know, one of the most dubious and controversial aspects of the most dubious and controversial aspects of the entire operation, he's going to happen to have this book and happen to be married. Well, actually, he was not married to his wife on 9/11. He married her afterwards.
Oh, that's interesting.
And yeah, and you know, she's a bit younger than him. Her name's Shirley Hughes.
Okay.
And he did admit she's an employee with the FBI. So all these connections are extremely dubious at many levels. And then the fact that he is a part of the operation has been proven by all the witnesses who placed the plane on the north side. So in 2008, after I obtained additional evidence confirming the accounts of the police officers at the gas station and the gas station attendant, Robert Tercios, who saw the plane pull up on the north side, we got all the confirmation from the Arlington Cemetery employees who are on the other side, who also saw the plane on the north side from Arlington Cemetery and noticed the bank because they saw it approach from the Navy Annex. Well, after I had this incredible amount of evidence proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the plane did not hit these light poles, I went knocking on Lloyd's door again to confront him with this evidence and see what he had to say about it.
Okay.
And it, as you can see in the presentation, very odd situation. He ended up basically trying to claim he was in a completely different place. Well, he tried to claim he was where all the other witnesses said the plane was.
Yeah, I thought that was extraordinary that he's basically now saying that he wasn't in that position on the bridge there, and he's saying he was further down the road.
Right. All photographs show him just south of the bridge, him and the light pole, and that's, of course, where all the poles had to be to line up with the official story. Now, all of a sudden, when we're confronting him with this evidence, he's claiming he was on the north side, where the plane really was, and where no light poles were knocked down. Of course, this contradicts all the photographs that we were able to show to him and prove him that he's not telling the truth to us at this moment. And you can see his face really change. You can see his demeanor change when he all of a sudden becomes from confident and clear and sure of himself to almost seeming like a senile old man and being confused. When he wasn't confused at all, we know exactly what was happening, and we know for a fact that no plane hit the light poles and that no light pole hit his cab. And all the damage to his cab, which we also physically examined, he got in our car, our rental car, we drove to his property on the country where we got to physically examine the cab. Now, the internal damage to the cab.
So he didn't get the cab repaired. It didn't get repaired. He kept it in that state.
Right.
Is that correct?
He kept it untouched, non-repaired, exactly like it was. Of course, there was a lot. It would have been 7 years, so there was a lot of wear and tear. There was actually termites all throughout it.
Sure.
The windshield was broken out, but we got to see the inside now.
That's interesting.
And see it up close.
Yeah.
And you can even see in the photographs from that day that the damage to the dash is rather significant and that the passenger seat was knocked off the hinge. But really, the damage to the inside requires a pull or something large to have gone in there, whereas the damage to the outside shows that it's impossible for this to happen. So the only conclusion, of course, especially since we know the plane was nowhere near the poles, is that all of this damage was simply staged and prefabricated in advance.
Right, right. So, I mean, just we're speculating here, but so what you're saying that someone picked up the pole and just rammed it through the windscreen? I mean, something must have done that damage to the inside of his car.
Right, there's no reason to believe it was done with a pole. I mean, they could have done it in a garage the day before with a crowbar.
Right.
We'll never know exactly how they did it, but there isn't a reason to suggest it was from the pole. Now, the pole itself has an odd bend in it that was allegedly from the plane.
Yeah.
And there's physical evidence on the road. We have very high-resolution images from photographer Jason Ingersoll, who was right on the scene and took close-up shots of this staged scene. You can see there's a scratch on the pavement where they literally dragged the pole.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that scratch. Yeah, circular. It's kind of, a long scratch.
Yeah, and it's just a single scratch. Now, certainly it makes no sense with the notion that, he pulled the pole out of his car and then fell down on the ground with the pole right there. You see glass and the lamp all laying right next to it as if it was laid out like that. And the scratch itself is absolute physical evidence that they dragged this pole from the side of the road. The pole could have very well been laid out the night before. Nobody's going to notice a pole on the side of the road while they're driving by in traffic. We know that for a fact because we even have evidence that another pole in the same area, light pole, that was down by wind, has been on the side of the road ever since 2006 and still remains there to this day.
Right. So
it's clear that people don't notice light poles on the side of the road when they're driving to work. It's not something they're normally concerned with.
Well, you propose in the film that Secret Service agents came around the night before. Or somebody came around the night before and removed several poles. Now,
not exactly. What we suggest is that due to the arrival of the president, the heliport tower is right there.
Right.
And we have evidence, or we know for a fact, that Bush was departed from the heliport on 9/10 and was scheduled to arrive at the heliport on 9/11. Because Sean Boger, the heliport tower controller, is actually one of the North Side witnesses that we interviewed, and he told us this, and we've seen it other places as well.
Okay.
So what this means is they had an excuse to perhaps have undercover operatives who were disguised as Secret Service combing the area under the excuse of securing the area for the president. Now, we have no reason to believe that the night before is when they actually removed the poles. I mean, this could have happened in days or weeks prior. Because, in the cover of normal road maintenance in the middle of the night, they could have removed these poles, maybe not even all five at once. Maybe over the span of several weeks, they just removed these poles. And again, this is not something anybody's going to notice as light poles are disappearing and changing. Light poles change all the time. It's just regular road maintenance that nobody pre-9/11 would think of at all. So it's clearly possible for them to have done this and staged prefabricate the damage to the poles themselves prior to the event and then lay them out perhaps the night before.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I get really kind of confused I'm just going to try and put this together as a complete picture of, the conspirators have planned an event, and they've said, well, we're going to stage a plane flying over, and we're going to blow something up, and we're going to knock down some poles in advance of the event so that we can say that it wasn't an explosion, it wasn't a bomb, it was a plane, and that the plane knocked these things over. And I'm just trying to put that all together as one big conspiracy, and it just sounds so ridiculous. And this is where I can't get the gestalt together. I can't see this in a logical way.
Well, I hear you, and that's of course the reaction to many people. Just as soon as you mentioned that 9/11 was an inside job, and that they actually the towers in Building 7 all came down via covert controlled demolition from exotic nanothermite weaponry.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is ridiculous to the layman to hear something like that. So obviously, the complexity of this operation is ridiculous if you lay it out like that on many levels. So there's no question. There's a lot of things to make you think, gosh, why would they do this? Why would they do that?
Yeah.
The reality is we can only look at the evidence that exists when you're talking about a black operation on this level. And I think what's clear is one of the things that they knew they could rely on here was the big lie syndrome. And
okay.
That's really simply the situation where you tell a lie so big that nobody's able to believe it could possibly be a lie. And that was outlined by Hitler, I believe, first. And you can,
indeed.
We can see that. We can see that, in fact, it's working rather well with the 9/11 operation.
Yeah, it has worked. It's worked very well. We have an anti-war movement, but we don't really have much of a 9/11 movement. I mean, it's there. People are sympathetic. But, on the 8th of October, there was a little march here in Sydney. It's probably about 150 people, opposing the war in Afghanistan. But the people who organised the peace march don't have much time for the 9/11 truth people. And I'm sure it's the same in your part of the world. So we have a long way to go. Where do we go from here? I mean, you've said in your film that you'd like to be able to get subpoena power to have these people testify in court, and they're willing to do that, your witnesses. You seem to have gathered together enough information I'm not sure on its own. It's very interesting on its own. But obviously
we can say this over and over, but I really want to stress the point that what we've uncovered here is extremely important on major levels because
okay.
It really can't be spun. Nobody can say that a plane on that north side actually hit the building. It can't be done. So once you're in a position that you accept this, and once you're in a position that you understand the evidence we present for this north side approach is overwhelming and really proves beyond a reasonable doubt that this is what happened, there's no turning back. Now, this is why we're getting resistance from some people, because there's been a major campaign going on now for years within the movement
right.
to not focus on the Pentagon
yeah.
and to ignore the Pentagon due to this confusion out there and this predominant belief that there simply is no proof at the Pentagon. Well, of course, this was all said before we uncovered all this evidence proving that the plane did not hit. So now that we've released this evidence to the public and so many people are embracing it, you've got all these other people who've already taken this position to not focus on the Pentagon really upset about it. And they're reacting strongly by attacking Citizen Investigation Team, and attacking the evidence and even the witnesses that we present, which really is not a very logical reaction. Now, the reality is what we present here is every bit as potent as evidence for nanothermite. In fact, I'd even argue more so, and here's why. You can present the nanothermite paper to Congress people. You could present it to your friends and family. But I don't know about you here, but when I go through that paper, as much as I know that in my heart that controlled demolition is absolutely proven,
yeah.
and as much as I believe that Stephen Jones and crew have uncovered evidence for nanothermite, when I personally look at that paper, I don't understand a word of it.
Sure.
Bottom line, it's really too complex, it's too scientific, and very difficult to wrap around. Plus, you're talking about a very serious psychological, emotional attachment to those towers that these people had, because this is what they used for the operation. Now, that psychological attachment is removed when you talk about the Pentagon. That's famous for its ridiculous spending. It's a military target, and many
yeah.
people question that then on its face already, even regular people, because it's so dubious as well. So you remove the psychological aspects, but when you're talking about the evidence we present, the simple eyewitness testimony, that really is nothing but a simple right or left claim. Either the plane was here or the plane was there. It does not take any scientific
yeah.
reasoning to figure out that this is the proof, that this is absolute proof. So it's very easy to get your mind around, and we feel absolutely that's just as important. So the notion that anybody who wants to uncover this would want to dismiss evidence that exposes the operation is simply ludicrous on its face because, frankly, everyone will agree that in any criminal investigation, the more evidence you have, the better.
Well, on that issue of you know, the quality of your evidence, have you attempted to submit a paper to the Journal of 9/11 Studies?
Right. Well, you know, at this point, you know, that's not important to us because because of the nature of the evidence we present, it's eyewitness evidence. That
right.
means you have to see them talk about it firsthand in order
right.
to understand it fully. So we can write scientific paper after scientific paper, but what value does that have? It's really watching the video evidence of these witnesses describe it firsthand. However, that being said, since Frank Legg has put out his paper erroneously
right.
stating that there is no scientific proof that no 757 hit the building, we absolutely do plan to put out a rebuttal to that and an answer to that that we've been told will be published in the journal. So that's eventually something that perhaps will be to come, but really it's not too much of an important focus right now of ours. Plus, Frank Legg's up to version 6 he's working on now, so
right.
we figure
yeah.
we'll wait till he comes out with what he at least deems to be his final version before we're going to put out a response. But as it stands, in none of these versions has he addressed the evidence of the citizen investigation team directly. He made one cursory mention of one of the witnesses in a footnote, and that's Sergeant Legassi. And,
okay.
of course, he doesn't refute the information or present any counter evidence at all. So, really, when his first paper came out, he had no hypothesis. And it wasn't until we had a lot of communications with Frank Legg and Stephen Jones via email after the release of that paper
right.
to explain to him explicitly why he was misrepresenting the position of Pilots for 9/11 Truth and why he was misrepresenting the evidence for a flyover. And we did in explicit detail. And to tell him, look, this is really nothing but an opinion piece. It's not a scientific paper at all. It wasn't until version 3 and after we pointed this out to him that he finally came out with his hypothesis for this paper, his alleged hypothesis, which really isn't a scientific hypothesis at all. In fact, he simply says it's a negative hypothesis. It says that there is no scientific proof that a Boeing 757 did not hit the Pentagon. But again, we present that scientific proof. Now,
well, it's very hard to provide proof for a negative.
I'll tell you why we call it scientific proof, too.
Right, yeah.
Because while eyewitness accounts are certainly subjective and certainly fallible quite often, corroboration is a scientific process and the time-tested, society-accepted, well-known scientific process in order to validate eyewitness accounts. And clearly, we've used that method very strictly in order to make these claims about the placement of the plane, and we're up to 13 people, now actually 14, who confirm the North Side approach definitively and unequivocally without question. So this does, in fact, become scientific proof that this is where the plane flew.
Yeah, well, I do hope that you do submit something to the journal, and because I mean, they seem to have a reputation of treating everything that's done with the correct, you know, scientific approach.
Haven't done that in this case. They absolutely have not, and that's why we're in a position right now where we've been going back and forth with Frank Legg, pointing this out to him, pointing out how his paper is not scientific, pointing out how it's avoiding dismissing the evidence rather than addressing it or attempting to refute it. And this is a sticking point. It's really not a good situation.
So, okay, yeah, and, you know, I have spoken to Frank a fair bit about this, but we didn't, to be fair, we didn't get into some of these questions. Frank was really focused on questioning the what Frank really emphasizes is the fact that there were lots of witnesses who saw the plane hit the building. Now, actually, this is something we haven't talked about so far. Have you spoken to the witnesses who actually say they saw the plane hit the building, of which there are about 12, I think. I know that there's a number of witnesses who've actually say I saw the plane go into the building.
Right, yeah, there's plenty of them that say that, and a lot of them that believe it. But when you analyze their accounts forensically, and that means you talk with them directly, talk with them firsthand, because any quote out of context by the media, any secondhand quote, is not really evidence. It's just simply hearsay.
Right.
Until you get a hold of the witness directly and confirm their location and then analyze their true point of view, their POV,
right.
in relation to the complex topography and landscape and see what they could have seen, the real details start to emerge. And the
okay.
fact is, a lot of these people are honest witnesses who simply saw the plane and then saw a big explosion, but were not able to see the alleged impact point at all.
Okay.
So because of this, they naturally believe the plane hit the building, and a lot of them even confidently assert, I saw the plane hit the Pentagon. When you talk to them and ask them closely, and they're like, well, no, I didn't actually see it go in the building. We just believe that it hit because that's how the deception worked. Now, that being said, there no doubt are several eyewitnesses quoted in the media who were in a position to see the plane go into the building who claimed that they saw this happen.
Now, one of these is Mike Walter. Did you manage to track him down?
Well, yeah, we did. We actually had dinner with Mike Walter at his house in 2006.
Right.
And had a chance to talk with him in great length. Now, he wasn't willing to give us a formal interview.
Okay.
And he did commit to one, although he backed out of it the next day and changed his mind. Now, Mike Walter is definitely one of the more dubious witnesses. He's worked for USA Today. He is a morning news anchor today for WUSA. So he's a part of the mainstream media, and he's heavily cited as another witness to the alleged impact. There's video recordings of him on the scene talking about it. He even said it was a cruise missile. It looked like a cruise missile with wings. So this statement was used to help fuel the missile theory, which turned out to be disinfo.
That's interesting.
Sure enough, there are several interviews with him in different locations in the area, and he contradicts himself many times over, describing things that he could not have seen from even his alleged POV. He changes details several times. So there are many things. And then he talks about watching the plane. Well, we have him admitting that he could not have seen the alleged or that trees were blocking his view. He admitted that with in an interview with the next day after the attack.
Right.
But then later on, he comes out saying that he watched it go in and that the wings folded and that's why the hole is so small.
Really?
But sure enough, when you're at that position on the highway, you cannot see the alleged impact points. There's no way he would have been able to see the type of detail that he's describing. So, yeah, Mike Walter implicates himself with these contradictory statements, and simply his position with USA Today is dubious, and of course his just the high level that he was used as a part of the propaganda to sell the official story and to go after quote-unquote conspiracy theorists. So there's a lot of things. I'd say that Mike Walter is definitely up there as one of the most highly implicated witnesses next to Lloyd, the cab driver.
Right.
Now there's one other aspect I'd like to get into before we wrap this up, if I can, and this
sure.
is the second plane cover story.
Okay.
This is a very, very important part of the operation and how they were able to pull this off in broad daylight and be in a position to have an excuse for the people who did see the plane flying away, a plausible excuse that makes them think, oh, okay, maybe I just saw another plane. And what they did was they put out a myth that there was a second plane literally shadowing American Airlines 757 and that it veered away at the last moment and flew away from the scene during the attack, during the explosion. So obviously if there are any reports of a second plane behaving in this manner at all, it performs it acts as the perfect cover for anyone who really saw the attack jet flying away. Now, there is evidence that there certainly was a C-130 that flew into the scene 3 minutes later. So it was not there at the time of the attack. Now, we know this because, first off, we've talked with many eyewitnesses who saw it approach, and they saw it approach from the northwest, and again, it was several minutes after the attack. And Pilots for 9/11 Truth had a direct email dialogue with the pilot himself, Lieutenant Colonel Steve O'Brien, who admits that he was so far away at the time of the explosion that he couldn't even tell that the explosion was coming from the Pentagon. Now, the Pentagon's the largest low-rise structure on Earth, so a military pilot would certainly be able to tell that that's where the explosion was coming from if he was close enough or was shadowing American Airlines 757. But he certainly was not. And the point is that this is a myth that was put out there that none of the eyewitnesses support except for one implicated gentleman. I shouldn't call him a gentleman.
Right.
His name is Keith Wheelhouse is his name.
Right.
And we interviewed this man as well. And he's not in National Security Alert, but you can see our interview with him in our supplemental presentation called The Pentagon Flyover, How They Pulled It Off, also available to watch for free on our website, citizeninvestigationteam.com.
No worries.
But Keith, Now, Keith Wheelhouse was reported in the Daily Press as seeing the C-130 shadowing, watching both planes approach together and then veering away. So we knew right away that his account was dubious because none of the other eyewitnesses were talking about this. So we worked hard to track him down and get an interview with Keith Wheelhouse, and eventually we scored one. It took quite a bit of work. He was very dismissive and confident over the phone and didn't want to commit to an interview. And then after about a year of trying, when we were going to Arlington, he agreed. So we drove 3.5 hours to interview him at his home. As soon as we showed up on his door, he turned white as a ghost. He was definitely nervous. And you could see that in his interview. His voice is shaking. There's a notable difference between how he answers questions compared to all the genuine witnesses from National Security Alert, who are very relaxed, nonchalant about what they saw. They just talk about it because they know it's what they saw. Well, Keith Wheelhouse reacts very differently. And sure enough, while we were in his house, he even asked us, well, when we told him that we talked to other witnesses, he asked us before the interview started, well, what did they say? He wanted us to tell us what the other eyewitnesses saw, which is very interesting. And sure enough, on video camera during that interview, he confirmed the dubious detail that he saw both planes approach. He said he saw them both approach for 60 seconds, which is absolutely impossible. And he confirms his alleged location in the cemetery that does not have a view of the gas station, a view of the alleged official flight path, or any of it. So he would not have been able to see any of this. Now, what's also notable, and a lot of people are using this guy to support the official flight path and the official south side approach, because we gave him an overhead to draw on and draw the flight path. And while he did this, he admitted he had no idea where the Sitco station was. He had no memory of the Sitco station whatsoever. He was not from the area, did not know the topography very well at all. But it just so happens that he drew that flight path line perfect on the south side, exactly like the official story, perfectly straight and exactly like it. He's the only witness who did this. So right. He contradicted all the other genuine witnesses who drew a banking north side approach. So absolutely, Keith Wheelhouse is implicated just as much as Mike Walter and Lloyd England.
Okay, that sounds pretty interesting. Also, I should point out that there is very, very strong evidence that there was another plane, which was an E-4B flying much higher altitude, but that story also has been blended in with the stories about an additional plane. And now that the story about the E-4B is totally confirmed. It was actually filmed on CNN, and I've just got the raw story article up on the page here at the moment. And that has never been explained. It's never been either confirmed or denied by official sources. But it's absolutely certain that it was there, and it's the most sophisticated military plane in the whole military arsenal. It's the one that has all the communications equipment that can launch nuclear missiles and just do basically everything. So
right. Now, that's a good point. Now, all the evidence shows that this plane was not in the airspace until after the attack, about 9:43.
Right,
Is when people saw it after the attack. Now, what's been happening is people have blended the confusion of this account to suggest it was in the airspace before the attack.
Okay.
If it was, that this would prove complicity on the part of the government. But in fact, it wasn't. So there really is nothing there at all in that respect. Now, we feel that the purpose of this plane being it was over the skies of Washington, D.C., not Arlington.
So right.
It wasn't over the river. It wasn't over the Pentagon. It was over in D.C.
It was filmed while they were evacuating the White House, I believe. Like, it was actually...
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Right. So, and the footage shows people evacuating, everybody running, and they didn't evacuate the White House until after the attack on the Pentagon.
Okay.
So that's how we know that this didn't happen until after the attack. But the point is, we show eyewitnesses that we've spoken with further back in the flight path, we've shown in other presentations that the actual attack jet flew over D.C. skies and came from east of the Potomac River when it did its loop around before it came north of the gas station and then flew over and away. Now, this is significant because the NTSB data requires the loop of the plane, the famous loop, to be completely on the west side of the river at all times. And so the official story does not have the attack jet flying over D.C. skies at all, ever, although this was the prominent belief of many people in the area for several years, that it did fly over D.C. So we think, in fact, that the decoy jet did fly over DC, the actual attack jet, and that the E-4B was launched just to add confusion and to sow confusion. So anybody who saw the attack jet over DC skies, they could say, well, you just saw the E-4B and have another excuse out there. So the C-130 and the E-4B both helped sow this confusion about this plane that was not Flight 77, but definitely part of the attack, and definitely in the skies at the time of the attack on the north side of the gas station, and then flying over the building and away from the building immediately after the explosion.
Great, great. Excellent summary. Look, I think we're going to probably have to wrap it up, unless there's anything, just any last things you wanted to say. I think this is a really important part of the puzzle of 9/11. And, you guys have chosen to focus on one subject and you're continuing with it. And it seems to have consistency to me. So, I really respect what you're doing.
Well, excellent, Harewood. Thank you so much for addressing this information and this seemingly controversial topic, because I understand you're probably under a lot of pressure not to. So I appreciate that you did.
Yeah, well, there's, people say different things. I'm independent and I'll always stay independent, basically just trust my own instincts, just try to follow the evidence.
Yeah. That's excellent.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks so much, Craig, for coming on, and we might follow this up at some point.
Yes, it's been my pleasure. I'll do it anytime.
Great. Okay, well, goodbye, and I'll catch you again sometime soon, hopefully. Cheers.
Okay, you bet. Bye now.
Great.
Cheers.
Well, that about wraps up our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Something a little different. And, it's another step towards trying to get closer to the truth. I mean, we try to come at the truth from every possible angle, and we are not so much concerned about pleasing this or that group. We're not about sort of allegiances or alliances. We're simply about facts and truth. So I hope you found that show worthwhile. And on that note, I'll say goodbye on this 11th of October 2009. Thanks for joining us.